You're listening to Simpler One Earth Living from Jubilee One Earth Economics and Simple Living Works with co-hosts Lee Van Ham and Jerry Iverson. Today we feature a conversation with Carrie Radloff, a Sierra Club activist and member of the Sioux City, Iowa Environmental Advisory Board.
Imagine yourself in the tri-state area on the Missouri River that includes Iowa, South Dakota, and Nebraska. And you might wonder, is anything positive happening in this area that is so regressive politically? Well, this episode answers a resounding yes. Despite anti-environment corporations and Republican-held legislatures and governor's offices, activists in the Sierra Club and with local city governments are working to keep their environment clean and healthy.
Greetings, Lee, from Sioux City, Iowa, and Simple Living Works.
And I greet you, Jerry, from San Diego and One Earth Jubilee Economics.
Carrie currently serves as chair of the Northwest Iowa Group of Sierra Club. She has helped us immensely in organization, research, communications, and outreach. We've worked with Carrie for over 5 years on various environmental efforts in our area. She helped us develop our community outreach and strives to create mutually beneficial connections. Carrie is driven to help make good things happen and has a pleasant temperament and humorous honesty that makes her the first person we turn to for help for so many things. That she offers her time and skills with no material reward shows her true motivations lie in working for the greater good. She applies these strong leadership qualities to her roles as chair of the Sioux City Environmental Advisory Board, the PR membership chair of the Lus Hills Wild Ones chapter, and many other organizations and endeavors close to her heart. You may recall my conversation a few episodes back with Adam Mason of ICCI, Iowa Citizens for Community Improvement. ICCI is working statewide to gain a moratorium on new and expanded hog confinements, which pollute the air and waterways, making Iowa the second greatest polluter of the Gulf of Mexico. Yes, all of these poisons end up downstream. So please do listen to that episode, too.
I'm excited about your interview, Jerry, so let's go to that previously recorded conversation.
Well, Carrie, you're a member of the Sioux City, Iowa Environmental Advisory Board.
That is correct.
Now, you must go through some frustrations because the way it is right now, I read that fewer than half the residents of Sioux City actually use our recycling program. And so how do you deal with some of the frustrations of trying to advance environmental concerns for the city?
Well, actually, we have surpassed half of the households in Sioux City have a recycling bin. To what degree they participate in the recycling program curbside is up for debate. I don't have the statistics on our actual tonnage, but we did surpass 50% within the last 2 years. But the frustrations are very great in trying to encourage people to recycle, especially getting to the people who currently do not have a recycle bin and aren't aware that recycling is available. Trying to get to them is extremely difficult. We do have a recycling campaign that we rolled out recently, just in the last month or so. And with it, we have some branding and we have a tagline that recycling, it starts with you, because it does. You have to make the decision to opt into the program and to put recyclables into the container and put it out by the curb. So it definitely starts with the individual. We also have some PSAs that are out and some new brochures, new branding. So we're pretty excited to see what the next few months are going to bring with that campaign.
Well, that's encouraging. Are you dealing with some climate change deniers who just still don't agree that recycling is necessary or helpful?
Not so much the climate change deniers, but people who will read an article on the internet about some community that took a load of recyclables to the landfill because they couldn't find a market for it, or because it was too contaminated to ship to China, since they have cracked down on the quality of materials that they will accept. However, locally, right here, specifically in Sioux City, we don't have a problem with finding a market for the materials. Our recyclers don't send their materials overseas. So that crackdown that we've heard about over the last couple of years, although it has affected prices of materials that people will pay for the recyclables, it has not directly affected what our recyclers are able to do with the materials.
Having a Republican legislature and a Republican governor, and living in an area that has a U.S. congressional representative who is a national embarrassment, do you find any political restraints, or is Sioux City kind of immune from some of those larger political restraints and pressures in trying to care for the earth?
We are definitely not immune to those restraints. One of the biggest frustrations was with the Sioux City Environmental Advisory Board. A few years ago, we were asked to look into the plastic bag issue and look into regulating plastic bags, banning them, doing a fee, something. We spent months and months, hours and hours, working on this issue. And then in April 2017, the Iowa legislature had passed a bill that Branstad signed that essentially banned the ban, so that cities and counties cannot ban things like styrofoam, plastic bags, plastic utensils, plastic straws, that type of thing. So we are hampered throughout the state of Iowa in taking care of the source of some of the issues that we have because of the legislature, the governor, and other entities that have them a little bit under their thumb.
Now, we're in kind of a tri-state area here. Just to give a little geography lesson, since we have listeners all over the place, we live in Sioux City, Iowa. There's also South Sioux City, Nebraska, and North Sioux City, South Dakota, all gathered around the Missouri River here. And South Dakota is also a red state, and Nebraska is a red state, with the only state in the nation with a unicameral, which is heavily controlled by the Republican Party. Do you find any regional pressures, any regional hope for advancing care of the earth?
I have not observed anything on like a regional scale that's very progressive, shall we say. I know that a number of communities in Nebraska are making great strides in their recycling programs, in banning materials from the landfill, which means that they have to be diverted to be recycled, such as corrugated cardboard, composting, community composting, that type of thing. It's been very encouraging to see that come out of Nebraska. I haven't noticed that coming out of South Dakota as much, but that's could just be because I haven't really been paying attention. I don't get their newsletters. And on the Iowa side, I know that lots of communities, lots of individuals are frustrated with what they are able to do, what's available to them. To a great degree, it's because of the rural nature, because of how spread out people are in this region, that cities do better with it than the smaller communities. But we have seen great leadership from some of the smaller communities, too, such as Lamar's and other communities in Plymouth County require recycling in their I say urban areas, but in their cities, towns, and villages. So that is encouraging. That type of action requiring behaviors can be a bit difficult to do on a larger scale, like in Sioux City, though. There are a lot of factors involved. But but on a regional scale, I'm not noticing a much of a collective action.
I know that you were very active a couple of years ago in getting glass recycling because our recycler had no longer accepted glass. And so now we have large dumpsters at several of our grocery stores that will accept glass. Give me an update on that program.
Yes, we took glass out of curbside recycling because the glass itself would break and it would contaminate other recyclables, which would lower the value. People who were buying fiber, paper, didn't necessarily want a lot of glass in it. And conversely, a lot of the broken glass, when it finally got through the system, had a lot of contamination. And so its value was reduced as well. So that's why we took it out of the curbside collection. Luckily, Ripple Glass out of Kansas City was a great solution. So we do have those purple bins at many of our grocery stores. We have one downtown as well. The biggest benefit has just been the volume of glass that has been recycled. For example, last year, we recycled 178 tons of glass, and that was up from the 150 tons from 2017, the first year of the program. It's been paying off, and the best part about it is because just over half of the households in Sioux City have curbside recycling. Many people who live in apartments do not, and businesses have to pay for it themselves. However, with these drop-off bins, anybody, businesses, apartment dwellers, people who are just coming to town to shop, can drop off their glass in these bins. And so we have been very, very happy with the results.
Well, I had an interesting experience the other day. I interviewed Adam Mason from the ICCI, Iowa Citizens for Community Improvement, a couple of months ago, and he was telling us about their efforts to get a moratorium on animal confinements, primarily hog confinements, either enlarging or getting new confinements. And that seems like a very positive thing, since so much of the manure runoff, as well as the pesticide and fertilizer runoff on our Iowa fields, is contaminating the Missouri and Mississippi rivers and thereby contaminating the Gulf of Mexico. But I ran into someone recently and was having a conversation with him at a community event. He happens to be with Farm Credit. And so he was saying how he was coming from the other side. He was blaming residents for putting contaminants on their lawns. He was blaming school districts and hospitals for putting pesticides on their lawns, which run then into the sewer system. So he wasn't willing to take the blame for the farmers being the primary polluters. Of course, the amount of acreage involved in farming compared to lawns is astronomical. But nonetheless, it was interesting to see some of the pushback against what the ICCI and the Sierra Club is trying to do. So have you, as an activist with the Sierra Club, also found some of these, what I would call, false arguments for limiting or having a moratorium on log confinements?
Yes, people will make arguments against the moratorium for many reasons. And I can understand some of those reasons because, you know, this is the United States and we are all about freedoms and property rights. However, no, there's no one easy answer either to the issues that we're facing with nutrient runoff into our streams and waterways. Yes, urban fertilizers and pesticides and oils and other things of that nature that run off from our storm systems is a huge problem, but it's not the sole problem. There are some very good farmers out there that manage their manure and their cropland well, but there are many who don't. And identifying where the problem areas are and focusing on that would be a boon to the issue. However, funding is extremely limited and enforcement is extremely sparse, shall we say. So I don't see a clear solution. A moratorium would be a great solution, a moratorium on CAFOs. I don't see that happening within the state of Iowa, although, frankly, I'm not sure where else we can put more CAFOs.
Well, now, I understand that the CAFOs would be regulated by the Department of Natural Resources for the state. Is there any hope of the city, like City of Sioux City, regulating or having some sort of voluntary program to reduce the amount of residential runoff?
It would be a voluntary program, I'm sure. Education is the key, trying to get the word out about what people are putting onto their lawns and, frankly, whether or not you need to have a lawn. being a part of the Les Hills Wild Ones, I am very much pro-native plants for many reasons, and one of them is that they don't need fertilizer, they don't need pesticide, they don't need additional watering, they pretty much take care of themselves, in addition to being a better carbon capture system than turf grass, as well as, you know, cleaning the water as it filtrates through. So it's very frustrating that it has to be kind of a one-on-one recruiting campaign to convince people to make some smart choices and educate them on why it's better in their best interest to do so.
We'll return momentarily to our conversation with Carrie Radloff. We want you to know that One Earth Jubilee has taken another step to help us all counter the carbon dioxide we put into the air as we drive our cars, fly away to places, heat or cool our home, and all the ways our lives release CO2 into the atmosphere. Just this past week, a new record was set for 415 parts per million of carbon dioxide in the air, and that's more than Homo sapiens have ever experienced in the entire time we've been on the planet. Well, we can offset the tons of CO2 that we put into the air by planting trees, and here's how. First, calculate our carbon. We can calculate our carbon with a calculator online. It's at www.carbonify.com. And it's an Australian organization that is has a really helpful calculator. Well, then we donate the amount that the calculator totals for us. One place we can donate it is to Jubilee Economics Tree Fund, because the two Jubilee Circles in Mexico and the one in San Diego all work with trusted groups to plant trees. Not that this is a perfect solution, not by any means, because, trees die, and when they do, they put CO2 back into the air. But it's still a good step. Trees live a long time, and every day they live, they sequester carbon from the atmosphere and enrich the soil while putting out oxygen. The April newsletter of Jubileo, which was an Earth Day edition, it's on the Jubilee website, and it tells you a whole lot more. The show notes to this podcast will also give you a link to that newsletter and to the carbon calculator. All right, I hope you'll participate, and now let's return to this interesting conversation with Carrie Radloff.
Okay, let's take this one step further. This is very interesting, because I know there are some cities, for example, that have zoning regulations about what people can plant in their yards. For example, you can't have agricultural animals, you can't have chickens in certain towns. Would there be any regulations at this point, any that you can tear up your grass and put in grassland?
Very interesting that you should ask that question, because that's something that's been on my mind for the last year or two, to try to kind of get a handle on. I don't know the Sioux City ordinance right now, but we have met with city council and other members of the city and other city boards about this issue. And city council is very much on board with, you know, people cutting down on their fertilizer use, even cutting down on turf grass. One action city council itself took about a year ago was an ordinance change for Sioux City Parks and Rec to use native plants whenever possible when replanting in new trail areas. And Sioux City's been adding a lot of new trails. So this has been a kind of a major milestone for us in getting these native plants being recognized and chosen first to be planted. So the city is on board. The city understands. It's really getting the residents to understand kind of where the natural limits are in planting native plants in their yards. We do have, you know, ordinances in place. I believe it's 12 inches, anything over 12 inches, and somebody might call the weed police on you. But there are ways to work around that. If you make your planting look intentional and you keep it somewhat attractive and kept up, and you keep actual noxious weeds to a minimum and be sure to eradicate them while keeping visibilities and accessibility from the sidewalks and streets clear, the city is very much understanding and supportive of using native plants in an urban landscape.
For our listeners, let's just do a little geography lesson. Sioux City, Iowa is on what's called the Lus Hills, which is an interesting geological formation along the Missouri River, which runs, the Lus Hills are run a couple of hundred miles north and south along the Missouri River. And the Lus Hills Wild Ones is actually a group that is encouraging people to preserve what remaining prairie grasses we have and also to plant them. Any more details you want to share?
Yeah, absolutely. In addition to just prairie grasses, we're very, very much on board with wildflowers and supporting pollinators. We have a number of pollinators that are very dependent on specific types of plants. Everybody knows about the monarch and the milkweed, but there are other plants such as the fritillary that depend on prairie violets, and swallowtails depend on golden alexanders, and plants like parsley and dill. So we want people to replace these exotic, alien, imported plants that really do no good for anybody other than the human to look at once in a while, and replace them with native wildflowers that actually are a benefit to, you know, bees and butterflies and birds. A lot of people don't understand that almost all terrestrial birds depend on insects to feed their young. So if you like having birds around, you need to have the insects. And in order to have the insects, you need to have these native plants that the insects feed on.
Yes, we just heard, of course, a devastating report that 1 million species, that's animal species, are subject to extinction because of our current way of life on Earth. And I just heard recently that we now are facing a 7% decrease in insects per year. So it's you're right. The insects provide an important part of the web of life. Okay, Carrie, without going into excruciating detail, can you tell us more about what the environmental board is doing?
This year, we've really been focusing on recycling, and along with that is waste reduction, trying to educate people on some of their choices when they're shopping, using reusable bags, and we even give away reusable mesh produce bags, so that when you go and buy your apples and oranges, you don't use a new bag every time. You can put them in these, you know, handy little mesh bags. And they're useful for other things too, such as seed collecting, because they breathe and they allow dirt and other small particles to fall through. But that's not the intended purpose that the EAB purchased them for. We also are looking at water quality issues. Storm water is always a concern, trying to educate people that the storm drains drain right into the river, and we don't want to have pollutants going into our storm drains. That includes fertilizers and pesticides, you know, and oils and other other outputs from vehicles, but that also means grass clippings. Grass clippings are very high in nitrogen and phosphorus because we put all those fertilizers on them. So, you know, we often see people mowing or even intentionally putting grass clippings into the storm drains and into the gutters, and that is a big no-no. We do not want that to happen.
Instead, it goes in on curbside recycling and goes to the recycling center, where I understand they're producing methane to run the recycling center.
Well, not the recycling center, but the landfill. Yes, grass clippings and other organics can go into your curbside garbage, and they are collected. The methane is collected and sold to the ethanol plant, as I recall, to make ethanol.
Now, let's talk about ethanol. We still have a couple of minutes, because this is a very controversial issue, and that is that methanol is a loss. That is, it takes more inputs to create the corn, to create the ethanol, than what we get out of it. Is that still the case, or is this a positive program? I'm bringing this up because, of course, Iowa is one of the two largest corn producers in the nation.
Yeah, that is a good question, and I don't have a good answer because it depends on who you talk to, whether or not corn ethanol is a positive or a negative. Personally, I'm not a fan of the monoculture of growing corn. It doesn't hold on to soil, so we have a lot of soil loss through wind and water. In addition to the water pollution that it contributes to when the fertilizers run off. But besides that, people do talk about that it costs more to produce corn ethanol than it does to produce gasoline. However, other people argue that the ethanol industry is actually creating a better feed product for cattle and other livestock as a byproduct of the process, that these solids are still getting used after, you know, whatever they take for the ethanol process. So it depends who you talk to, whether or not corn ethanol is good or bad, if it's worth it or not. There's a lot of factors involved.
So it's still up for debate. So now let's shift to the Sierra Club, because you're a Sierra Club activist, and you've been involved, I think, in, for example, testing for water quality, at least in northwest Iowa. Tell us about that and maybe some of the other Sierra Club activities that that are of benefit to this area.
I was just thinking about the water testing recently because we were with the Sioux City Environmental Advisory Board. We're going to be looking at the Perry Creek watershed. So I was thinking back to our water testing training that the Sierra Club put together a few years ago to see if we can get some people activated again and get some data points on which to base some of that study. Other things that we work with Sierra Club, I mean, they get involved in everything, really. I mean, because the environment encompasses everything that we know, water quality, and that involves, you know, surface water, drinking water, the Missouri River, the Big Sioux River, as we talked about earlier. You know, we are part of the Less Hills, and so we're very passionate about trying to protect our Less Hills and the prairie that is here. You know, less than 0.1% of prairie in the state of Iowa remains. We are the most changed landscape in the entire United States, at least continental United States. And most of the remaining prairie is in the Less Hills because, of course, it was a little bit less able to, you know, be tilled under for crops and a little less able to be populated for home use, to, you know, for people to live on. We also talk a lot about climate change and oil pipelines and renewable energies. We've really been doing a lot with renewable energy the last couple of years after the we had a big year of fighting pipelines, and we've kind of followed that up with starting to promote more wind and solar and educating people about those benefits.
Well, Iowa, I understand, is what, second in the nation in the use of wind power. Midwest Energy has invested heavily in putting up windmills. There are some communities around the country who are, you know, opposing that because what I consider to be false arguments that they are killing bats and killing birds. And it's, I guess there are a few negative side effects, but by and large, Iowa seems to be proving that wind energy is a very positive thing.
I think wind energy in Iowa is an extremely positive thing. You know, we mentioned the wildlife issues, but when you boil it down, coal and oil kill hundreds times more birds and bats than wind turbines do. So that's simply not an argument. And proper siting and shutting down the turbines during feeding and migration, you know, there are solutions to that. When we're talking about one of the arguments I hear sometimes is that that wind turbines take good agricultural land out of production. However, a wind turbine sits on less than 1 acre of land, and that 1 acre of land that it's leased from the farmer yields probably 10 to 25 times the income for that farmer than if he were to plow it, he or she were to plow it and crop it. So that is money that our local farmers can count on year after year after year. They don't have to worry about a good harvest, you know, when the rains are going to come, if there's, you know, too much rain, you know, what the markets are going to do, which is a big thing these days with tariffs in place. So, you know, wind turbines really are a good thing for our rural communities, not to mention the property tax income that the counties receive. That means new roads and better, you know, fire and police protection and better schools and more programs in schools, too.
Thank you, Carrie. Carrie Radloff is an activist with the Sierra Club and also a member of the Sioux City, Iowa Environmental Advisory Board. Any closing thoughts, Carrie? Any things you'd like to, that I might have missed?
I would just like to encourage people to pay attention to the world around them and try to make the best choice for the planet and the other people and animals that live on it. Think outside yourself a little bit more than you maybe did yesterday, and think about the impacts of your actions, because you really do have an impact on the world around you. And frankly, the less impact you can have in a negative way, the better.
You've been listening to the second half of Jerry's conversation with Carrie Radloff. Such an important conversation, because our tendency is to separate everything into red and blue states, and Carrie shows how quickly that can lead us to wrong conclusions about what's happening to keep our planet livable. In a future episode, we'll be talking with Michael Patrick Spotted Eagle O'Connor, a Native American artist and activist. Now, have you also listened to our recent podcasts? There's so much there that we learned from them. In January, we heard about the Safe Harbors Network welcoming immigrants near the San Diego-Tijuana border. In February, we heard about the efforts of Iowa Citizens for Community Improvement to achieve a moratorium on new and enlarged animal confinements in Iowa, and that would protect our air and water. And then in March, we talked to Chuck Collins from the Institute of Policy Studies, a progressive think tank in D.C. He talked about how inequality hurts everybody. In April, Pat Trahan, a banker, talked about leaving suburban isolation for urban diversity and leaving Wall Street to invest in his own neighborhood. Then in May, we heard from Stephen Cornett, a regenerative farmer focused in creating good soil full of nutrients so that we have nutritional products in the food that is grown there. Well, do listen. You're sure to pick up thoughts that you'll value. As I said, we learn in every episode we do. And also, I want to give a plug to subscribe to Jerry's Simpler Living Daily Nudge to get quick reminders of our blogs, our podcast episodes, and other intriguing happenings and events such as Non-Conform Freely Celebrations, ways to honor rites of passage, and holidays without consumerism.
Well, please tell us your thoughts on these subjects. Leave a message on Jubilee One Earth Economics and Simple Living Works Facebook pages. Time to wrap up this episode. You can subscribe to this podcast under the names The Common Good Podcast and Simple Living Works at iTunes or your favorite podcast service. Urge your friends to do the same. Until next time, this is Jerry Iverson of Simple Living Works with co-host Lee Van Ham of Jubilee One Earth Economics, wishing you well as we strive together to bring simpler One Earth living into being for the common good.
Learn to live simply so others can live.